Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. College football, the topic of the day. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and the man who does the real heavy lifting around these parts, Payne Insider. Payne, 2 weeks of college football in the books, my friend. What's jumped off at the page for you thus far?
Obviously, my Noles are abysmal at this point.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get to them in greater detail. I'm sure Dusty will have some pretty poignant things to say about their trip up to the Carrier Dome to take on Syracuse.
It's going to be a tough matchup. And we talked about the turnover luck going against them in game one. But boy, they needed the turnover luck just to escape Samford. So that was real disappointing. When I look at just our power numbers right now, one of our largest movers thus far through the season is Virginia Tech. I think we probably underestimated, and it's stupid to do this, their coaching staff, because Fuente is an elite offensive mind, and then Bud Foster, clearly one of the best defensive minds ever to do it at the college football level. And you read some of his quotes. He said, "This was an important season for me. I'm putting in a little extra time." I think he knew his talent wasn't quite there, and there were some issues going on in the offseason. But that's been a unit that has moved up our power ratings list pretty good.
It's always interesting to see how much these teams move and all the homework we do during the offseason, how quickly you either have to scrap it. We always say you never want to overreact to what you see, especially in the NFL. College football, I feel sometimes we fall into the trap of underreacting. So I guess real quickly, because we do have a heavy slate of games that I want to get to in greater detail. I mean, with only two data points, how much can you actually make comprehensive adjustments to some of your preconceived notions for these teams coming into the campaign?
You absolutely have to make them, and I think you have to adjust quicker than the books, obviously, if you want to maintain your edge or have an edge moving forward. So the more data points you get, obviously, the better. We're still not into like the situational football yet with the conference play. It's more data driven. It's more power numbers. So it's a little bit tougher for me in that regard, because I like some situational things, but I do rely on a lot of my math guys. Another team that we've seen move up the ranks a ton is Arizona State at this point. They've moved up in our power ratings list about 20 spots off the top of my head. So Herm Edwards getting it done. We had a lot of doubt. There was a lot of detractors. We were probably one of them. I did like how he recovered the recruiting class late. I would think that's probably something he excels in. He's going to be able to sit in the living room and win over mom and dad pretty good. So I could see them recruiting at a little bit higher level. Let's see, though, as time goes on, if the message wears off a little bit. He is a bit of a drill sergeant. So certainly a tough spot this week against San Diego State.
Yeah, a game we won't cover in great detail or probably even touch on at all. Revenge scenario for Arizona State. What I found interesting, Payne, about Arizona State, and I know I want to get to these games, like I said, watching that telecast against Michigan State, the one thing that was the thread that connected the whole broadcast, culture change, culture change, culture change. And I think that's sometimes what a program needs. And we'll see how long Herm can continue getting this team going forward. But definitely has been an interesting watch, at least through 120 minutes of football.
Culture change for sure. Perfect situation. Probably helped a little bit when you got the big old boys from Michigan coming in. And it's 101 degrees at kickoff. And then you had the circadian deal there with the circadian rhythm, the body clocks. That game kicked off, I believe, at nearly 11 Eastern. So the body clock adjustment there was very difficult for the Spartans.
Never a bad thing. We welcome in the third member of the Bet the Board college football team. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dusty Dvoracek. Dusty, first things first, we have 2 weeks of college football in the books. Anything really jumped off the page at you thus far?
I mean, I think that the two big boys in the SEC have lived up to it. I mean, Alabama looks unbelievable. I thought it was a statement win by Georgia going to South Carolina last week. You know, I think Ohio State offensively continues to look like the real deal, as well as Oklahoma. So Clemson, you know, I'm not overly worried, though. The fact that Kellen Mond put up 430 yards in that defense, kind of a bit of a head scratcher, tells me, I think, more about A&M and where Jimbo has that team going, more so than it does Clemson. But I guess the big thing is just kind of the big boys that we anticipated to be really good. So far, they look really good.
And A&M and Clemson, each relatively straightforward matchups this weekend where they're massive favorites, of course, could be some contests. Heavily impacted by weather. One spot that won't have any residue from Hurricane Florence in central New York, where it's the Syracuse Orange. 3-point underdogs against the Florida State Seminoles. Total in this game, 68 at betonline.ag. And Payne, while Dusty's going to be on the call for this game, I want to start with you because I know this point spread has drawn a lot of attention. I think a lot of folks seeing Florida State struggle in their opener against Virginia Tech, needing to outlast Samford week two, would be surprised to see the Noles as a field goal favorite in this contest.
I'm having just problems with the number. And, you know, this got as high as 4 yesterday. There was some professional money on Syracuse. I thought the line painted a pretty good picture with Florida State opening up the favorite, as abysmal as they have looked this season. So for me, I'm off this game. The market indicators to me when I saw this number open said FSU's the side. The problem is some of the fundamentals don't really match up, and that's what scares me. So I'm just going to be a viewer on this one for sure.
Well, when you mentioned the fundamentals, Dusty, I'm sure you've spent extensive time watching the first two games in the Willie Taggart era. We know what Syracuse's offense looks like when they're able to keep Eric Dungy healthy and on the football field. But what really jumps off as you start to go through your initial breakdowns of these two teams?
I mean, the biggest thing that jumps off the page to me is how deficient the Florida State offensive line is, guys. And they've been beat up. 10 different guys have played. But I'm just going to be frank with you. They can't block people. I mean, Virginia Tech absolutely manhandled them. 5 sacks. I think it was 13 tackles for loss. But just the penetration. And my biggest problem with the offensive line, guys, is the lack of athleticism and their inability to get to the second level. Like, they're not getting to the second level backers, and backers are just coming free, making it tough on Florida State to be able to establish a run. DeAndre Francois is constantly under duress and pressure. That did not change with Samford. Still a lot of penetration. When they pull somebody, they can't back block, and they're allowing the defensive lineman aligned over the puller to get in the backfield and make plays in the backfield. I think there was 3 or 4 holding penalties against Florida State's offensive line against Samford. So, I mean, as I look at this, I mean, I like DeAndre Francois. I think when he's given time, he can throw a good ball. They've had a couple of guys kind of emerge at wide receiver. I really like Naquan Murray. But, I mean, and obviously the backfield with Jacques Patrick and Cam Akers, I mean, they're talented. But I say this all the time, fellas, when you can't block people, you can't run efficient offense. So, to me, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, Syracuse defensively against Western Michigan, they gave up a lot of explosive plays, both in the run game. They weren't fundamentally sound. They weren't gap sound. They got gashed quite a bit. And they also took some shots down the field. Now, they look much better in their week two matchup against Wagner. But I do think there's some deficiencies on that Syracuse defense. But, man, when I look at these two matchups, the biggest thing that stands out to me is the deficiency up front down in Tallahassee.
I was going to ask you about that, Dusty, because you mentioned Florida State and some of their struggles. We know their offensive line and mass unit. Right now, 101st in the country in the FBS, averaging 3.62 yards per carry. They've already allowed 6 sacks and 20 tackles for loss. They've converted 9 out of 30 third down opportunities, and 19 times already this season they faced 3rd and 6 or longer. So when you look at Syracuse's shortcomings on the defensive line and some of the big plays they gave up to Western Michigan, you look at the mass unit that is Florida State on the offensive line. Do you think there's an edge to be found in that particular matchup compared to the other side, where we know the strength of the Orange is their offense and their explosive capabilities against a Florida State defense that has athletes that can make plays there?
I mean, I it's so hard for me to say I give the edge to Syracuse, because I think they're okay up front. I don't think they're great. They got a couple of guys that can get off the rock and get after you. So, I mean, I think that they have a chance to win that matchup. I just think outside, the skill for Florida State is superior. And I do think that they're going to be able to hit some plays down the field in the throw game. And if they can protect DeAndre Francois, I think he's going to be able to have some success. I don't trust that offensive line as far as I can throw them, but if you're asking me who I give an edge to, I would give the slightest of edge to Florida State only because they still have star-studded players at the skill position. And I do think, given time, DeAndre Francois can be a legit player. The matchup on the other side, guys, I mean, Eric Dungy, he is explosive. I mean, he's the only quarterback in college football with 6,000 passing yards, 1,000 rushing yards. We've seen that displayed this year. Week one, he runs for 200 yards. Week number two, he has 5 passing touchdowns. It's a multifaceted offense with Dino Babers. They want to play with tempo. What I appreciate about it is they can spread you out and throw the ball, but they can also get in big people, multiple tight ends, multiple backs, and pound the football. Their run schemes are really interesting. Everything is something that you're going to read, and there's a counter off of everything. So you may have zone read to the front side, speed option to the backside. Zone read to the front, you've got a quarterback counter coming back. So it's almost as if, you know, everything has an answer however you're going to defend it. So I do think it's a big test for a Florida State defense that I think is reeling a little bit. They gave up a ton of passing yards last week to Samford. But we know that they possess some talented players. But, man, as we sit here, this Syracuse offense, they are rolling right now heading into this matchup.
Payne, when you look at a game like this, knowing that there's so many questions with only 2 data points for each of these teams and a total that's already moved from 61 in some locations out to 68, does this become a defining moment trying to figure out what Florida State and Syracuse are going to be going forward?
Well, and Dino Babers has already talked about this. He says this is the game, right? This is the one that's going to put them on the map and get them moving forward in a different direction. For Florida State, it starts to get a little scary if you don't win this one. Is the bowl eligible streak going to snap completely? And the one concerning thing, and if you don't have ties to the program, this is pretty scary as hell, but all summer, all fall camp, it was the FSU offense absolutely dominating its defense. And my point to saying that is the Vatek game, defensively, that could be an anomaly. We saw Samford average 6.7 yards per play with Hodges. They were 7% more successful on offense than FSU. Now you're going into the Carrier Dome, a place that is going to be absolutely rocking. Revenge on the mind for the Orange, who should have probably beat FSU at Doak last season. And I think Dusty just hit this right on the head. It's the offensive line. That is the issue for FSU. Starting right tackle Landon Dickerson is out. He was by far the most talented lineman FSU has. There's also questions with Cole Minshew and Abdu Bella as well. There is zero depth on that offensive line. And Florida State can't even run things in practice right now because their second unit's so bad. They don't want to get their offensive weapons killed at practice. And this is the one spot where FSU could not afford injuries, and they have them right now. I also think there's an issue here with Willie Taggart's system. It's just drastically different than Jimbo's. There was always going to be this transitional phase. He has a nice quarterback in Francois, but the problem is Francois can't run the ball. He can't keep a defense honest. He's struggling with the read option. The overall inability to run the ball is just putting this offensive system that has never, ever done well in third and long in a ton of third and long situations. And you want to look at these numbers, Todd. FSU is 108th in success rate on third and long, 121st on third and short. The offensive line, I don't think, is going to improve this season at all. You see a young kid like Cam Akers, he's getting frustrated. This is a guy who played quarterback in high school. They moved him to running back. He was great last year as a freshman, 46% of his runs graded successful, but he's trying to hit the grand slam every single time now. His runs right now, just 25% success rate. So that's going to be something to look forward to here. Trips inside the 40, they have been abysmal. They're not scoring at all, averaging 2.6 points per trip inside the 40 through 2 games. It's tough to lay a number on the road if you can't convert scores for touchdowns.
Don't have to be a math wizard to figure out a lot of the cases you guys have made here. The things may be a little bit more dire for the Seminoles than anybody let on before the season started. And when you look at Florida State, the last 16 games they've played in the league, they haven't exactly lined people's pockets. 4-12 against the spread. A fascinating game come Saturday morning that I'm sure will teach us an awful lot about these two teams. A game that will also teach us about one of the favorites from the group of 5 that a lot of people have penciled in to one of the big bowl games at the end of the year. It's Boise State going on the road to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, gentlemen, 63.5. We have seen some professional money come in on Boise thus far. Dusty, I'll start with you. You're right there in Oklahoma State country in the strength of their strong bed. What's been the initial buzz about Taylor Cornelius and what people should be able to expect in his first real test. No disrespect to Missouri State or South Alabama, but this is finally big boy football.
Yeah, you know, I thought there was more questions than answers in the season debut against Southeast Missouri. You know, he wasn't pulling the trigger, very tentative. You know, don't get confused by the numbers. A lot of those were checkdowns to the running back where they couldn't tackle people. So I had a lot of questions after week one. Though he had two interceptions, I liked what I saw better in week two in the South Alabama game. He was pushing the ball down the field. He was finding targets like Tyron Johnson, who's one of the most explosive playmakers in the Big 12. He was finding Tylan Wallace, who had 10 catches. So I thought even though it was a touchdown to two interception ratio, I thought he looked much better just getting the ball down the field, finding a comfort, and just taking some of those shots that we know is huge with this Oklahoma State offense. So a question I have, though, on the offensive line, can they move people? This has been a question now for 3 years on the offensive line. And when I look at last week's matchup against South Alabama, Oklahoma State has a stable of running back. Justice Hill, he needs to get more touches in this game, but they've got Chuba Hubbard. They've got J.D. King. They are loaded at running back, but they only average 3.7 yards a carry against South Alabama. I don't care how many people South Alabama puts in the box. You should be able to run the football at a much higher clip than that. So with a Boise State defense that is known for their front seven defensive prowess, to me, as much as it is about Taylor Cornelius, they better be able to establish a rushing attack to open up the play action and open up some throws down the field to get Taylor Cornelius some opportunities and really his first legitimate start.
Payne, when you look at Boise State, I know you talk to some guys that are extremely high on the Broncos. How do you feel the talent that Coach Harsin is going to bring into Stillwater will match up with Mike Gundy, who's recruited at a relatively high level in Oklahoma State for the last few seasons?
I like Boise a lot. I think this might be one of their more talented teams. And when you just look at the spot and the situation, right, this is the only Power 5 opponent on the schedule. It's on the road in a hostile environment. If Boise has any hopes of making the playoffs, this is a must win. And you do your reading, and they know it, right? This game has been circled. It's their Super Bowl. The offense has been dynamic the first 2 weeks, averaged 10.5 yards per play against UConn. That was number one in the country last week. 65% of their offensive plays were successful week one at Troy. This is a Boise team where just pro bettors were high on them coming into the season. They're getting three guys back this week as well, significant contributors. You got Octavius Evans, defensive tackle David Moa, and linebacker Tyson Maiva. Those guys are high-end players, and they haven't played yet this season, so I think those are huge get-backs for sure. And when I look at who these guys have played, I feel like Oklahoma State, having played Missouri State and South Alabama, I think it's a larger task stepping up in class here against Boise than vice versa. And I think the one thing here, and Dusty kind of hit on this, well, you look at the yards per play data, it's very good for the Pokes. There's been a lot of chunk plays. There's been a lot of missed tackles that led to explosive plays. And I think those are vital to have. We talk about them all the time. But success rate is more consistent and it's more predictive in our mind. And despite playing two horrific teams, Oklahoma State's success rate, 44% and 51% the first 2 weeks of the season, I don't think that's very good when you adjust for opponent. What is it going to look like this week when you're not backing down little brother in the driveway and you're kind of forced to take a fight in your own weight class?
Well, I mean, I've never been able to back down little brother in the driveway, so that analogy doesn't hold water with me. But
your sister, though, you do have a sister, so I'm sure it's kind of the same thing.
Although she back in the day, man, he's backing her down, boom, on the 7 foot goal.
She was much more talented in the basketball realm. I at least was better as far as soccer was concerned. But go ahead, Dusty. I know you had something to say. You want to jump in with?
Well, I was just going to say, obviously, you mentioned Oklahoma State, and I've got a great feel for this team. But I also had Boise State three times last year, and I had them down the stretch in the Mountain West conference championship game, and I saw this team grow, come together. They got 10 starters back on defense, guys, and they are veteran. They are fundamentally sound. They tackle well out in space, and they just flat out get after you. They only lose Leighton Vander Esch, which is a big guy to lose, but man, they've really stepped up, and I'm with Payne. I believe in this Boise State team. I think they're legit. I don't really buy that they can make the college football playoff. I just think it's going to be too hard in the, you know, where we sit right now in college football for a group of five to make it. This will likely be the only ranked team at the end of the season that they've got to win if they're able to go to Stillwater and get a victory. But I love this defense. What I really like is the balance they've showed on offense. They've got over 80 starts in their offensive line back. They've ran the football at almost 7 yards a clip. Alexander Mattison is a legit back who can break tackles. He's tough to deal with. But I think the biggest thing for this offense, Brett Rypien was so inconsistent last year, it was kind of a head-scratcher. And just talking to some people at Boise here early on in the week, Brett Rypien has been unbelievable so far. He's completing over 73% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, no picks, and he's letting it rip down the field. He's making tight window throws. He's allowing his playmakers to go make plays. So the balance I see offensively has been extremely impressive, because last year they were more just a team that could that had to lean on the run game, and they kind of did a two-quarterback committee last year with Brett Rypien as well as Montel Cozart, the Kansas grad transfer. So this is Brett Rippin's show this year. He's really shown a lot of confidence and really playing the best football he's played so far since he's been at Boise. So this Oklahoma State defense, Jim Knowles, the new defensive coordinator, he left Duke. He's come to Stillwater to try to fix that Glenn Spencer defense. So far, so good. They've flown around. They've got some athletes. Calvin Bundage, a player to watch out for, needs to have an impact in this game. But Jim Knowles and that defense will be put to the test against a very balanced Boise State offense with a physical running attack and the ability to push the ball down the field.
Little to say, gentlemen, what will be a fun game on Saturday. One other number to keep in mind. You go back to 1993. Boise State's been listed as an underdog just 41 times during that span. 27-14 against the spread, just shy of 66%. So clearly the boys from the Smurf Turf have thrived when odds makers disrespect them on the number. To a game featuring two of the heavyweights in the SEC West. It'll be a game featured on CBS. When you look at Auburn against LSU, it's LSU, a 9.5-point underdog for their trip to Jordan-Hare. Total in this game, 45 at betonline.ag. Revenge from last season on the mind of an Auburn team that blew a 17-0 first quarter lead, a 20-0 lead overall, and squandered a 23-14 halftime lead. Dusty, when I look at these two teams, Auburn, we know their bread is butter with the defensive line, and Jarrett Stidham is more than capable of putting pressure on this LSU defense. What have we seen from the Tigers through 2 weeks? A little bit of a misleading game, in my opinion, against Miami, and then a blowout against a lightweight last week to lead us to believe that they can either compete or this game may get away from them in a hurry.
Well, the one thing I'm buying is Dave Aranda, the defensive coordinator, and his defense. I mean, he's got some dudes now. I mean, Devin White's one of the best linebackers you'll see in college football. He led the SEC last year, and he's picked up right where he left off. I mean, Greedy Williams on the back end, he can lock down just about anybody. Wouldn't be surprised if he's got Ryan Davis duty, who's their best vertical deep threat throughout the course of the day. But really, it's the defensive line for me that's been so impressive, guys. 9 sacks so far in these first couple of games, 5 against Miami, but also against the run. They're averaging opponents are averaging under 2 yards per carry against this LSU defense. So that's one area that I look at. You know, Auburn, we thought that they were going to come out and throw the football more. They really haven't thrown the football that great. Jarrett Stidham's only got 2 touchdown passes, and they're kind of going running back by committee. So if LSU can do what they've done so far through 2 games, which I believe they can, and Dave Aranda is as good as there gets in college football at scheming and being able to dial up some blitzes to make life tough on Jarrett Stidham, that's going to be the matchup to watch. Can Auburn up front, who's been pretty good, they were good against a Washington solid front seven, but can they deal with the front seven of LSU, especially knowing that Dave Aranda is going to be dialed up some exotic blitzes to try to give Jarrett Stidham all kinds of problems? And remember, guys, last year, Jarrett Stidham in the second half against the LSU defense was just 2 of 13 and 6 yards. So they completely shut him down.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. It was definitely uninventive play calling with Auburn a season ago. They got really predictable in this matchup. They ran the ball on 17 consecutive first down plays. We know all too well how that can put you behind the down and distance when you play defense as aggressive and attacking-minded as LSU can be. Payne, when we look at the other side of the ball, this LSU offense hasn't exactly wowed anybody thus far. Joe Burrow completing less than half his passes. Adrian McGee still out on the offensive line. And this LSU team has come out and said, we know we have to play physical. They're obviously going to try and run the ball, but I ask you quite frankly, will they be able to do that against this Auburn defensive front?
I'm not sure. That's the biggest question here. I could certainly see a situation where Auburn has some short fields because of them being set up by their defense. Their offense is certainly superior to the one LSU is going to trot out to Jordan-Hare. I think that's probably where this game is won. I don't believe LSU's offense has shown to be very good at this point. Don't be fooled by that Miami scoreboard. They were outgained by Miami by 0.2 yards per play. So certainly that didn't translate to a ball game that at one point was a 30-point blowout. The offense, it has question marks. Joe Burrow completing less than 48% of his passes. On offense, they were successful in just 34% of their plays against Miami, 46% last week against an FCS opponent. They will be without one of their offensive tackles. I know they get McGee back, but it looks like Charles is out. Charles is in this week. It's McGee who's out. So I think that could be a big loss, especially when you're going up against that Auburn defensive front. I am interested, though, to see what we're going to get out of Auburn. I know we're high on them. I think we have them power rated sixth right now in the entire country. But I came away from the Washington game just a little bit concerned. If it wasn't for Washington coming away with 16 points on six trips inside the 15-yard line, that's a different ball game. And I think Dusty hit on this, so I just want to piggyback off that a little bit. After the script wore off early, the Auburn offense struggled as a whole, only 4.8 yards per play against the Huskies. They were actually outgained by the Huskies by nearly 1 yard per play. We came into this season just a little bit concerned about Auburn's offense, and I think Stidham appears to really have a grasp of it, but the offensive line, there's some concerns. The running game, we're not quite sure. The receivers have been dinged up, potentially a couple of those guys coming back. But again, Malzahn's offense was held to 0 points the final 30 minutes last year. It just feels like in these big games, once the trickery, once the window dressing wears off, defenses really get accustomed to what's going on.
Joe Burrow's got to step up and play well, fellas. I mean, he just does. You know, they're 26% on third downs. They're going to be put in some third and long situations. Just going to happen. With that Auburn front, they're not going to run the ball at will on them. So can Joe Burrow, can he make some plays down the field? He has not shown, he hasn't thrown the bad play, no interceptions, but he has not shown the ability to consistently make throws down the field. If they're going to go into Jordan Hare and they're going to pull off this upset, he's going to have to be the one that extends some drives, makes some plays, especially on third down where Auburn is outstanding and LSU offensively has been terrible. Hey, by the way, also, Auburn, okay? They still have to go on the road. They've got to go to Starkville. They've got to go to Oxford. They've got to go to Tuscaloosa. They've got to go to Athens. This is a must-win for Gus Malzahn and the Auburn Tigers because you better take advantage of the home opportunities when you have them because life gets a lot more tricky throughout the course of the season when they have to hit the road. And by the way, home team has won 5 straight in this head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, there aren't a whole lot of Alabama states left on Auburn's schedule. Last thing, Payne, before we move on from this game, when you look at this number, does it suggest a lay it or don't play it type scenario here with the favorite?
It does. That's what the number tells us. Now, the power ratings, on the other hand, are a little different. I'm going to just put it that way. Now, these games have a tendency to balloon a little bit, especially when you have offenses that might not be able to move the ball. As Dusty alluded to, if Joe Burrow can't operate on offense, as good as Dave Aranda's defense is, they could wear down. We could see Joe Burrow potentially have a couple turnovers. There could be some short fields due to that, and these games tend to balloon a little bit. But when you look at a total that low, and I look at my power rating, it's probably not a game I'm going to be able to get to the window with an Auburn ticket on.
We look at Auburn. This has been a team that's thrived in conference, 10-5 against the spread against SEC foes over their last 15 games. Third installment, well, I guess that's what we'll call it, for the trilogy that is Texas-USC if we go back to one of the greatest games ever played in college football, the Vince Young National Championship. This time around, it's Texas, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 48.5. It was only a season ago where Texas found themselves about a 2.5 touchdown underdog, pushed the game to overtime before coming up just short. USC's first trip to Austin since 1966. But Dusty, I ask you this, where do the big plays come from? Because I can tell you one thing, I've watched both of these teams play, we'll call it about 3 games in total between them. There don't seem to be a whole lot of playmakers either wearing Longhorn jerseys or Trojans jerseys at this point.
No, you're absolutely right. In Texas, I mean, I think the biggest thing with Texas, if this comes to a close game, can Sam Ellinger keep himself from making the bad play, the turnover that's been so costly throughout his short tenure as a starting quarterback at Texas? We saw it last year, right? He had the fumble on the goal line in overtime against USC. So for me, that's one of the biggest things about this game and about the season moving forward. Those those crucial turnovers that we've seen Sam Ehlinger make time and time again. If you're looking for playmakers, I don't see a ton in the backfield. Trey Watson is kind of the bell cow running the football. Sam Ehlinger gets you those tough physical yards, but he's not explosive or dynamic as a runner. I think you have to go to little Jordan Humphrey, Colin Johnson, a couple of wide receivers that have good size, have good speed, but can Sam Ehlinger get them the football? I think that's a real question that a lot of people have right now. On the opposite side of the ball, boy, JT Daniels, he got a rude awakening to what big-time college football on the road's like last week, didn't he? I mean, he enjoyed a nice debut against a lesser UNLV team, but he goes on the road last week and really had some struggles. You know, Stephen Carr, for me, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten going. I thought that having called one of USC's games last year, he looked to me like he was going to be the next back that was going to really take that step and be able to be a dominant playmaker for them out of the backfield. I look at Tyler Vaughn's Michael Pittman Jr. as a couple of guys in the receiving core that you would hope could step up and be playmakers. But the reality is, through 2 weeks so far, guys, neither one of these offenses have really showed much explosion or any dynamic playmakers.
You mentioned JT. He was sacked four times in that loss against Stanford, turned the ball over three times. When the dust settled, 16 of 34. And you look at USC's offensive output, the fewest points for the Trojans in a football game since 1997. So little to say, it wasn't exactly what USC fans had hoped for up there on the farm against Stanford. Payne, when you look at these two teams, as far as power ratings are concerned, is there anything that's relatively surprising? I mean, Texas on the flip side, they were massive favorites last week against Tulsa, but you can make the case that Tulsa, if they don't drop two touchdown passes or miss three relatively makeable field goals, all 43 yards or shorter, they could have won that game outright against the Longhorns.
You're spot on, and I'm just looking at the power numbers right now. Texas, we make about a half point better on a neutral, but obviously you factor in home field advantage in Austin, a little sprinkle of revenge. But just reading the market right now, it would appear USC is the side. I don't have a penny on this game as it stands right now. When I look at the matchup, Texas should have opportunities on the ground. Dusty touched on this last week about USC's inability to stop the run, and right now it's proving true. 116th in the country, allowing 6.5 yards per rush attempt. And it's pretty shocking because they had six guys return with starting experience. They added in a nice JUCO to the defensive line. It just looks like they're missing their top two guys from a season ago. And I know, Todd, we joke about this. It's become the running joke here about the Pac-12. But this is just a soft unit up front right now for the Trojans. I think if the first two games are any indication, Texas should have success on the ground. And you do some reading, and USC is just painting this picture that it's fixable and there's errors about being out of position for giving up the big plays last week. But when you look at what Stanford is, they're an explosive offense. So I just don't take much from that, because Stanford last year, they were dead last in efficiency in the Pac-12. All they hit you with was the explosive play with Bryce Love. So, you know, kind of coming out and saying, hey, this was on us and we did fine on every other play except the explosive. I'm not really buying that. For USC offensively, this is something we've talked about ad nauseum. We weren't sure JT Daniels was going to be the guy initially, or if he was the best option to start the season. Right now, USC's offense averaged 4.5 yards per play last week against Stanford. At home, week one, against a Mountain West defense, 38% of USC's offensive snaps graded out successful. I saw this morning JT Daniels did get upgraded to probable with the hand. He's going to need some help from that ground game. They're struggling on that side of the ball as well, 4.4 yards per rush attempt. You got to do better than that when you have a freshman quarterback.
Dusty, we're not hot take you around here. I don't really speak in hyperbole, but you're around the coaching community. You know the proud traditions of both of these programs. Which one of these schools needs this victory more, but to set the pace and to set the tone before they really jump into the bulk of their conference schedule?
Well, both teams need it, but it's Tom Herman in Texas at home with a chance to beat USC. Tom Herman needs this. He needs it big time. Plus, I mean, I think, you know, he's got his quarterback back, right? I mean, this was supposed to be a year. A lot of people were saying Texas is back this year. They're going to compete for the Big 12. USC is clearly in a rebuild mode. With Sam Darnold gone, that offensive line is still in shambles. My question, can they protect JT Daniels? Is going to be one of the biggest keys, because if he's not given any time, we saw last week three turnovers. He sacked four times. That's a big key. But to me, it's not a must-win for Tom Herman. He's not getting fired next week. But, man, I feel like down on the 40 acres in Austin, how quickly the honeymoon seems to be over. People are little disgruntled with the lack of explosiveness offensively and just flat out not playing very well. So I think that they need to look good. They need to play well. They need to get some confidence before Big 12 play hits. And I think Tom Herman needs this on his home field to kind of back off some of the Texas faithful that are not quite so happy with Coach Herman right now. The Mensa is not being very Mensa-like, boys.
It's never ideal when Tom Herman is over complimentary in a win against Tulsa, that same Golden Hurricane team, 3-10 over their last 13 games. National title aspirations obviously on the line in Arlington, where it's Ohio State, a 12.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game at 60, taking on TCU. Last matchup between these proud programs came way back in 1973, and Ohio State will return to Arlington for the first time since they won the first ever college football playoff. And Payne, I want to ask you about where betonline.ag opened this number under 10. Immediately shoots into the double digits and kind of settles in that no man's land between 10 and 14. The total at 58 fell a touch low on the opener. But when you assess Ohio State and what you've seen through the first two games, TCU we knew was breaking in a young quarterback. Has anything changed regarding your preseason expectations for either of these programs?
Not at all. And I think if we get to 14 here, we could see a little resistance. I don't love this version of TCU as much as other Gary Patterson teams. And in general, I think their offense is a bit down. I want to see Sean Robinson make throws against defenses with a pulse. I want to see him convert passes that are more than wide receiver screens and dump offs. Can you make a defense work? And I think we're going to find out pretty early on in this game. We know he's a great threat with his legs. So far, TCU has been able to run the ball. They're ninth in the country in yards per rush. There were questions coming into this season about the O-line. We're going to find out what they are here. I do remember in 2016, Gary Patterson returned just one offensive lineman, and they ran for about 200 yards per game that season. So there are some question marks there. At the same time, I am concerned a little bit about Ohio State's defense. The idea of allowing 6.3 yards per play at home to Oregon State on a game that kicked off at noon Eastern, that hurt. I mean, that just, you know, a lot of red flag there for sure. There's a lot of unknowns in this game. And as electric as the Buckeyes offense is, you look at this 15 explosive plays in two games. They've been ridiculous on third down, 72% conversion rate there. They put up nearly 8 yards per play on a very good Rutgers defense. But in the back of my mind, I get this feeling Gary Patterson's going to have something up his sleeve here to slow things down. And without Urban Meyer on the sidelines, making those adjustments and making counters, this is going to be an interesting chess match. And I just think that if this gets to 14, we are going to see resistance on that. And there's going to be professional money on TCU at that number.
Dusty, Payne kind of made my point for me there and touching on one of the key things I have in this game regarding the coaching situation. We know Ohio State has assembled an elite staff behind Urban Meyer, but how much will his absence be felt in this particular game when you talk about adjustments and what could take place at halftime against a master tactician in Gary Patterson?
Well, I think Ryan Day's done a fantastic job calling plays, you know, taking over the team, being the temporary head coach. But, I mean, in games of this magnitude, this is where head coaches make their money, guys, because it's a call here, it's a decision there, it's an adjustment, you know, that makes a difference in these football games. So I think clearly it could potentially have it could be a huge advantage for TCU. I think it really matters if it gets close, if it's crunch time, you know, if it's a pressure pack situation for Ryan Day to have to be put under the gun for the first time and have to make a quick decision. So I think clearly you have to give advantage to Gary Patterson and TCU. And I can just speak from experience. Gary Patterson brought TCU into Norman, Oklahoma in 2005, my senior year, and they left with a win. This is a quality football coach who seems to, when no one thinks that his team has a chance, they step up and play really well. This defense is – I really like the defense. Ty Summers at linebacker, Ben Banigou, can flat out get after the quarterback. And they're going to need to do that. They're going to need to make life a little bit tough on Dwayne Haskins, who's been just fantastic so far this year. Now, they played no quality defenses, but you got to give the guy credit for at least four touchdown passes in each of his first two games. Never happened in Ohio State history at the quarterback spot. We know that they've got running backs in Weber and Dobbins. I just feel like Gary Patterson, when it comes to defense, I think he's absolutely one of the best in college football. He squeezes the orange and gets the most out of his players. So I just think it's a very interesting matchup. You've got Ohio State, the number 5 offensive efficiency in college football, and TCU's number 8 defensive efficiency in college football. So it's good on good. And especially in the red zone, TCU's been so good in the red zone this year at not allowing people to get in the end zone, haven't allowed a red zone touchdown yet, whereas Ohio State, they've gotten in the end zone 10 out of 12 possessions. So you got to expect with those playmakers, Ohio State's going to move the football. But when they get inside the 20, can Gary Patterson, that defense, bow its back and keep Ohio State to field goals as opposed to touchdowns? I think that's a real question that I have as it relates to this game. I'm going to disagree a little bit with Payne. Sorry, Payne, I got to do it, man. But for me, you're right in the fact that Sean Robinson, he needs to utilize his weapons. And they've got weapons outside. Kevontae Turpin, Jalen Reagor are flat out, they are speed demons. They can fly, they can get open, and they get out in space, they can create some problems. But I guess for me, I look at this, Sean Robinson's got to go play. I don't think that he needs to force himself to be a pocket passer. In a game like this, let's face it, TCU's O-lines look good so far. Nick Bosa and company, they're going to show him something they haven't seen this year. So you have to expect there's going to be pressure, there's going to be duress, and for me it's going to be about Sean Robinson knowing when to just tuck it and go and get what he can get, as opposed to trying to keep a play alive and force something down the field that could potentially go to a turnover. So I look more so in this game for Sean Robinson to make some plays with his legs and just be a football player as opposed to trying to make himself a pocket passer.
Dusty, do you think any of that mentality changes even a touch, knowing that he got nicked up late in the game against SMU and had some comments about just having to be smarter when he's carrying the ball?
I mean, yeah, listen, you do have to be smarter. You don't need to take unnecessary hits, but at the same time, this is what makes this guy good. This is what's going to help make this offense go. So for me, so far, what I've seen on the tape from him, you know, his athleticism, his ability to create and make some plays with his legs, that's kind of, you know, his calling card right now. So, yeah, you want to be able to slide and get down or step out of bounds when you can. That's going to be a physical Ohio State defense coming after him. But I would not want to handcuff him in a game like this because, you know, third and fourth situation, they want to go man coverage. And, you know, you got defenders backs to the quarterback. He needs to step up and be able to get what he can get if there's nothing down the field in the throw game.
One final thing, Payne, when you look at this number, we know the proximity of Arlington to Fort Worth where TCU is located, but we also know how well Ohio State fans travel. Should we be building in anything for home field advantage in this particular matchup or basically approaching it like it's a true neutral?
That's an interesting question, and I've been digging into that just a little bit, and I wanted to know the urban impact, so to speak. Did people have these tickets purchased long before there was discussions of him being suspended? Did that cool things off a little bit? You would think in Arlington, from what I'm reading, TCU fans are going to show out. But Ohio State right now travels so very well, and this is the first road game of the season. It's the first big one on the schedule, so they're gonna show up here pretty big, I would think. So we're not doing too much with the home field advantage.
Payne, these fans care about football. They're not worried. We've seen that they're not overly worried about the Urban Meyer situation. They just want to know when's our coach going to be back. So don't act like this is going to deter them from showing up in Arlington, Texas to support their beloved Buckeyes. I got a couple of stats that I think you guys will appreciate. Jerry World has been the house of horrors for the Big 12. How about this? The Big 12, 0-11 at Jerry World versus ranked non-conference opponents. I thought that was a very telling stat, not a good one for the Big 12. Also, TCU, you know, we don't think of TCU as a legitimate team on the scale of some of the big boys, but how about this? For teams with at least 11 wins in 3 out of the last 4 seasons, it's Bama, it's Clemson, it's OU, it's Ohio State, and it's the TCU Horned Frogs. So Gary Patterson, listen, don't sleep on the Frogs. I think that they're a very live dog down there in Arlington close to home.
It is crazy to think that it was probably, less than 20 years ago, TCU was toiling in Conference USA. Then they jumped to the Mountain West. Now we're talking about them in the same breath as some of the big boys and traditional blue bloods in all of college football. A chance to make a major statement Saturday night in Arlington, Texas. To the nightcap, which I think is one of the more fascinating games of the day with conference implications here, it's the Washington Huskies headed to Salt Lake City to take on the Utah Utes at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Washington, a 6.5-point road favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 47.5. You look at the last 3 meetings between these two teams. Utah, 3-0 against the spread. They won 3 years ago as a three-point underdog. They won that game outright. They covered 2 years ago, catching 10.5 a game right here in this same building, lost by 7. And it was only a season ago, catching 17.5, that it was the slimmest of margins, Washington escaping 33-30. Payne, home field advantage. I know we closed the Ohio State game and TCU trying to figure out what it meant on a neutral. How should we value what Utah has going on in Salt Lake City and how difficult a place it can be to play for conference opponents?
One of the largest home field advantages in all of college football, especially at night. That place is going to be rocking. And this is a Utah team that we pegged as being very good. We just thought they're going to be a year away. I think this game will determine if we're accelerating that timeline. The defense continues to be elite. I was looking at some of these numbers, and I know it's Weber State, but you hold any team in the country to 1 yard per play. I don't care who you're playing. That's impressive. Last week in a bad spot, different time zone on the road, you hold NIU to 3 yards per play. And there is one underlying thing I found on this game that's pretty interesting. If offensive coordinator Troy Taylor will have an impact defensively for the Utes. He was Jake Browning's high school coach at Folsom in California. Certainly there's going to be this, you know, maturation process from high school quarterback to senior in college, but you can compare tendencies, strengths, weaknesses that you knew Jake had from back then, see if they still exist on film. This is a Utah team that had Washington on the ropes last year on the highway. It required 10 points the final 55 seconds for the Huskies to pull off that win. So I can tell you right now, this number has flashed 7 a few times. It doesn't last very long, and maybe the public gets us there. It's the late bailout game, but at 7, I think there's an appetite from the professionals on Utah.
Dusty, when we look at Utah, I mean, this is a team that allowed 14 tackles for loss in their win against NIU last week, and Kyle Whittingham comes out and says, "We didn't get much going offensively tonight, and it was disappointing. We usually dominate special teams, but we were very average, had a field goal blocked and turned the ball over on a punt return." A coach that's accomplished as much as he has at the helm of this program coming out and say that, do you take that as a sign he knows this team is capable of a lot more and that's his way to call out the team knowing how important this game is going to be to define Utah's season?
Absolutely. I mean, you got to call your team out. Listen, they played like junk at NIU. It's 7-3 going to the fourth quarter. I mean, they need a pick six to salt the game away when it's 10-6 there late. So, look, absolutely. He's challenging his team. And I got no problem with this. I like it when coaches hold their team's feet to the fire. They challenge them. They question them. They say it was disappointing. There's no, you know what? Too many people sugarcoat things nowadays. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's no problem. If your team stinks, tell them they stink and try to motivate them to get them to play better. He knows what's coming into his backyard this week and the Washington Huskies, and he needs his team to be razor sharp and play with their hair on fire, something they did not do when they went on the road this past week. But that's where my problem lies in this matchup, guys. Utah's defense, there's no question. They're outstanding, right? They're physical up front. They get after you. Number one defensive efficiency in college football. I do question who they played against. I mean, Northern Illinois has only mustered up 176 yards against Iowa, so it's not like they're some kind of juggernaut. But when I look at Utah's offense, man, 1.7 yards per rush against Northern Illinois. Have you guys seen that Huskies defense up front? I mean, come on now. I don't know if Utah is going to have the offensive firepower. Tyler Huntley's an okay player. I never get overly excited about him. He was okay last year. He's been just okay this year. I don't know if Utah has enough, even at home, for them to be able to step up and put the points on the board they're going to need for what I expect will be a Washington offense that's going to get Myles Gaskin going. Here's the thing. This Utah defense, we praise it. We should praise it. Myles Gaskin's gone for over 150 yards in each of the last two matchups, and he's had 4 touchdowns over that span. So I think Myles Gaskin is a big key in this. Jake Browning's just been okay. He's been kind of hit and miss. They need to utilize their tight ends, but they utilize their tight ends by getting their rushing attack going. And I really don't know, guys, if Utah is going to have enough on offense to be able to compete with Washington. They need a big return. They need a block. They need something, in my opinion, in the special teams game if they're going to keep this close, because I just don't think Utah offensively has enough.
Dusty, does it concern you at all that Washington last season against two, I'll call them average opponents in Arizona State and Stanford, struggled mightily? I mean, they did drub the dregs on their schedule, Colorado, Rutgers, and Oregon State on the highway, but they didn't exactly look like a well-oiled machine when they left Seattle.
No, but you know what I look for more than that last year? I look at what I saw them do in Atlanta, Georgia, week number 1. And we referenced it earlier when we were talking about LSU-Auburn. But as I watched that game in the second half, I thought Washington was the superior team. I thought Washington made every mistake they possibly could not to win the game, which we don't typically see out of Coach Peterson's team. So we can look at last year all we want. I look at this year, and I look at, I think, a quality Auburn team that they stood toe-to-toe with. And as a matter of fact, I actually think if they played again, I would still pick Washington to win that game like I did in the opening matchup. So clearly, if they turn the football over the way that they did in that matchup, I think they had three turnovers, it's going to be tough to go on the road and beat anybody. But if you can go into Atlanta and take on Auburn and show the way that they did in that second half, I don't think that it's going to be – it doesn't worry me them going into Utah this week and being able to step up and play at a high level.
Final question for you, Payne. This game will kick off at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 Pacific. We'll have Dave Mason on shortly. I'm sure there's going to be liability on the road favorite. You said there was resistance every time this number flickered 7. Do you just kind of wait it out if you want to make a case for the dog, or how do you try and approach it? I know we're not going to have a play on the game, but for some of those folks who may want to dabble here, what would be your suggestion as far as market entry advice?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do, because I would probably need 7 to even consider this game, because I do believe Washington is better than people think. As Dusty alluded to, they dominated in the second half, and we always had those question marks. It was like, once I saw the score initially, it's like, oh, here we go again, Chris Peterson, Browning, you know, kind of stubbing their toe against elite opponents, and they really, really dominated large stretches of that game. So I think this is a much better Washington team than people think. I would need 7 to even consider it. It'll also give us time to figure out if Zach Moss is going to be a little bit healthier. He claims he's playing. He says there's no issues here, but he sat out the fourth quarter against NIU with an ankle injury. So I think Zach Moss needs to play in this game for you to even think about considering Utah.
What an intriguing slate of games, much more as we figure out what all these teams are going forward. Dusty, I want to thank you as always for the great input and analysis. You truly are the international man of mystery when it comes to football. You're pulling a little double duty this weekend, if our sources are correct.
That's right. So for all you great people, and by the way, you can follow me on Twitter, at Dusty Dvorak, and don't at me if you don't like the podcast. I will say, you guys do make me chuckle with some of the back and forth you have with some of the great listeners of Bet the Board podcast. So I guess you can keep me in those, because I will say sometimes I get stressed. I'm watching film and something will pop up and it'll definitely make me chuckle. But we have Syracuse, Florida State in the Carrier Dome. I know Payne will be right there on his seat with his popcorn and his Florida State boxer shorts on, hoping to will the Noles to a victory. So we appreciate Payne and all of you others that will join us at 11 a.m. on ESPN. I'll also be at Pittsburgh on Sunday. Got the Kansas City Chiefs at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and what should be a very interesting matchup. Ben Roethlisberger, 5 turnovers in week number 1 against those Browns. I still can't figure out how you win the turnover margin plus 5 and you don't win the game, being Cleveland. But Kansas City, man, you got to be impressed with what Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and that explosive offense did. It's going to be a lot of fun on Sunday in Heinz Field.
You know, if Mahomes goes nuts, the two of you, I'm just going to take a back seat on next Wednesday's podcast and let the two of you fawn over Patrick Mahomes, try and figure out to get his bus ready for Canton, and Dusty can get the tape measure and size him up for one of those gold jackets.
It's already been done, man. What are you talking about? I met with him earlier this week. He's a 44 long. He's good to go.
Always great stuff, Dusty. Safe travels up there to the oasis in the desert that is Central New York. We'll look forward to hearing you on the call. And we'll chat again same time next week, my friend.
Happy betting. Best of luck to our great listeners out there. And just remember, LSU Auburn, it's a simple winner. Just take the Tigers. Guaranteed victory.
Now, see, Payne, that's the kind of spirited banter I like between you and Dusty going toe-to-toe on the Florida State-Syracuse game. Just getting both sides of the coin, trying to figure out what this matchup will do to define who those two teams are going forward as they look towards October and November.
I loved what he said about this podcast and him being honest, that he pulls no punches, and that's kind of what we're built on. I say whatever the hell I want. So I think there's some good chemistry here. Initially, he definitely looked at me like the stat nerd, what do you know kind of guy, being a former player and being into that mix. But there's a nice little bondage going on here recently.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that I deal with on the TV show with Clay and Cousin Sally.
Oh, God.
I think I've been called a nerd multiple times already. I don't have half the nuggets you do.
he had to drop the TV show Big Ol' Superstar over here.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure we'll go Big Ol' Superstar. I think it's about 12 people have watched, but either way, we'll figure it out. We'll keep picking winners.
Your family members and mine included in that 12?
Hey, no. So maybe the numbers balloon out to 16. So we'll take it. It's all about moral victories early on.
You are a pessimist. So
as we get a few. You know what? I'm learning to be more optimistic. Having worked with you as long as I have now, I'm working on trying to weave optimism into my daily outlook. It's a much healthier lifestyle and that positive outlook for a business we do that'll challenge even the most intrepid spirits when it comes to games like Fresno State and ill-advised play calling from the four-yard line.
Iowa State was none better watching that long drive to end that game. When you take Iowa State plus four and they're just kind of holding on to the number and you just the third and nine completion where it needs to be reviewed and it's a first down by an inch. And then as much as I love Matt Campbell, he rushed like two or three guys on a second and a mile and they pick up, you know, all the mile except probably a grain of grass. And then they pick it up on third down. That was a tough one to watch as well.
It's a lovely business we've chosen. Time to welcome in our weekly contributor, a man that needs no real introduction. Of course, you can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, we know after week one, you came on the show last Wednesday, gloated about how well the house did. Similar results week two of college football, or did things start to regress a little bit?
No, it was a good weekend. I was a little surprised, to tell you the truth, sitting there Saturday watching the games. I thought it was going to be a rough day, but I got the figure Sunday morning, and I was pleasantly surprised. So, yeah, we did good. The public did well in Stanford. They started out great Friday with TCU, then kept the ball rolling with Ohio State, Mississippi State, Stanford. The house did well, and Texas A&M was huge. Kentucky was huge. South Florida. But, yeah, overall, but the action was great. So no complaints on the action. So it's a great weekend.
Dave, before we get to this week's Sharp and Square stuff, I wanted to ask you a question. With Hurricane Florence rolling in, did the guys on the odds floor do anything in anticipation of that? Did they put totals up later or shorten the limits?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely a special eye, a little closer eye on those games. You know, what was like eight games have been canceled so far, I think. But yeah, they put the totals up. They don't hold off too long to tell you the truth, but they'll put them up a little lower than they should, or they were supposed to. You know, when they get the numbers from their consultants, and they'll put them up a little bit lower. And of course, they always get bet lower. They always get bet under, so they just keep on putting them down. But they'll be circled sometimes. They'll put the red circle around those highlighted games. But yeah, the bigger, yeah, that's one of the concerns. And then, you know, it's a popular question. I saw somebody hit Furman up yesterday about it too. Is those season win totals too? That's always a popular question this time of year, what we do with season win totals. So, you know, as long as the game is made up at some point in the season, there's going to be action. But if the game's outright canceled and they don't play the game later in the season, then all those season win totals will be no action. So if there's any listeners out there wondering what we do with those, that's what we do here at Bet Online.
That's a good tidbit. I appreciate that, Dave. As we look to the action this week, anything sharp so far come in?
Yeah, there is some sharp. Marshall under 49. That's kind of hurricane stuff going on there. But, you know, the sharps pay attention to that stuff, right? That's what makes them sharp. They look for every little advantage. They're not waiting until Saturday to make their total plays. But they know a hurricane, and they think that number's too high. They're going to hit it. So they hit the under there, moved it down to 46.5. Hawaii plus 7. That's plus 6.5. Appalachian State minus 14. That's up to minus 16.5. Cuse plus 3.5, that's still plus 3.5, but minus 120. New Mexico State, plus 6.5, that's down to plus 4.5. And Bama, minus 19, that's up to minus 21.
And what are you looking at for public sides? Any liability ratcheting up there?
Absolutely. Always a ton. 73% on BC at Wake Forest, 78% on Miami at Toledo, 79% on Oklahoma at Iowa State, 88% on Nebraska versus Troy, 85% on Alabama, 92% on Georgia, 72% on Ohio State, 77% on Washington. So it'll be a lot of sweats. That Bama one's going to be huge. That has the most bet count so far.
I was going to say, Dave, when you talk about some of the public sides and rattling off three games that'll take place at 7 o'clock Eastern or later, safe to say the entire day is going to come down to Alabama, Ole Miss, Ohio State, TCU, and then Washington, Utah in the nightcap when everyone may chase to get out of a hole?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's maybe not the whole day, but that definitely makes or breaks your day. I mean, you could be up huge and you lose those three and you're breaking even, or you could be down huge and you win those three and you break even or a little profit. So, you know, a lot of that comes down to just like, you know, it's just like NFL and the Monday Night Football game, especially this past weekend. It's that either, you know, makes it a huge winner or a huge loser or whatever, but there's just going to be so much more action on those games. I mean, already, I mean, Alabama, there's more bets on that team than there are any other team in the earlier in the day. So when you have that much action on a night game this early, then yeah, that, you know, it's going to be a big time sweat Saturday night.
It's always funny as a bookmaker, you don't have to win the majority of your games, you just have to win the right games. And Dave, for those folks that may not be players at betonline.ag yet and maybe looking to try and get involved, or maybe some folks who are looking to already reload their accounts after a slow start to the season, what kind of promotions are available at the shop for them this weekend?
If you do not have a betonline.ag account, head on over to betonline.ag and sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB for a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account but have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% sportsbook bonus. Max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
A man that has all the answers to those questions you have for liability, sharp money, and all that fun stuff as we rapidly approach the weekend. Encourage all of you, our loyal listeners, to follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, thanks as always for the time this morning. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow about the NFL and how things worked out for Week 1 and what you guys are looking at for Week 2.
All right, fellas. Talk tomorrow.
Man, Payne, Mason's going to have a few sweats Saturday night. You know full well that they're not only going to need Utah to cover against Washington, and they love nothing more than Kyle Whittingham to get to the window outright in that particular game.
Tough place to play. If the offense can get going just a little bit, I do like what their defense presents. So, and I think he'll get a little help. Not a ton, but I think if they go to 7... he'll get a little help from the professionals on that side.
Excited to see all these games play out. But before we close up shop, one final order of business. We've started this season very well in the investments worth making category. Where are we going this weekend to get ourselves to the window?
This one's ugly again.
I mean, Colorado State was pretty ugly, but it was a Monet and a Picasso all rolled into one when you looked at the final score.
So, I like Troy this week a little bit, and it certainly concerns me where this number is going because we made the game 6. So when the number's this far off, you get a little concerned. That said, I like Troy plus the 11.5 or 12 that's out there now. If Adrian Martinez is limited or doesn't play at all, we're certainly going to beat this line move, I would think. And if he doesn't play, there's a massive drop off because once Martinez won that job, the number 2 transferred out. And now you're looking at Bunch as the signal caller, who was a third string guy, walk on, did receive only 1 scholarship to like an FCS program. So I think there is a drop off there. Certainly there's going to be rallying around Bunch. He's getting all the reps this week at practice. There is a big game on deck though for Nebraska here.
Yeah, I would say so, and I have to imagine if you're Scott Frost, your CEO of this program, Adrian Martinez is your guy going forward. It would be absolutely ridiculous to rush him back in a non-conference game. But hey, I'm not the one on the sidelines. I'm not in the Nebraska huddles. I would echo your same sentiments. This number taking off may be too much value to try and pass off as we look to play our numbers. And I will say one thing for Troy. People may look at the way they performed against Boise State in that final score. It was turnovers. It was self-inflicted wounds. I'm very curious to see how Troy handles themselves in hostile territory, but I think this game could be a lot closer than some Nebraska fans would like. So we'll go to the window.
And if Martinez does play.
What's up?
If Martinez does play, it's a knee, it's either an MCL or it's a bone bruise. His greatest weapon right now, although I was impressed with him as a passer, his greatest weapon right now are his legs. And even if he does go, I think he'd be extremely limited in that regard.
Troy Trojans, your best bet here on the Bet the Board podcast for college football Week 3. Special thanks, as always, to our weekly contributor, Dusty Dvorak. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak. Dave Mason as well. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Payne Insider. You can follow Payne, and I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Payne, before we close up shop, any final parting remarks?
No, let's go Troy.
Let's go Troy. Come Saturday afternoon, all of you loyal Bet the Board listeners, hopefully we'll see you at the window.